One thing that evolved, that I at least that I recognize evolving, when I started the S4B program to time now, which 10 or 11 years, has been the breaking down, if you will, or whatever term you want to use for it, of the barriers from company to company to company. And I noticed it significantly, say, from the time we started on the S4 contract, when at that time, back in the middle 50s, that if someone from North American or Boeing or Gunman or any other aircraft company wanted to come in and talk with us, he was discouraged first, and usually we didn't tell him everything we knew anyway when we sat down. And vice versa. And I think probably if you talk to some engineers that have gained most of their experience during the Apollo program, you'd find that they're pretty free with themselves, with other companies and their experiences.
Was this something too that began to generate about the middle part of the 60s, 64, 65, as things really began to pick up?
Yeah, I'd say a point in time, I'm not sure. I don't
Yeah.
know whether it was the middle 60s. Probably so. Probably the time the Apollo program really sprung out. See, because we worked on the S-4 from 60 to, I guess we launched the first one in 64. And at the time we launched it, it was essentially going out of business and everyone knew it. So it was probably 64, 65.
Could you make some comments about the evolution and difference of materials used in the S4B? You used a different kind of aluminum in the skirts, right? Than you did in the tanks. And I was wondering if you could make some comments about the design parameters, that dictate these kind of decisions.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I've forgotten. I imagine that we used 75, what's now called 7075 T6 aluminum in the skirts and interstages. And if that's correct, and I could find out before you leave, but that's carry on of the aircraft days, because the 7075 T6 aluminum was really developed for well, as far as I know, for commercial airplanes. I know they use it on military airplanes also. It's a material that has even better strength properties than 2014. And but it's not weldable at all. So anytime you have use for aluminum where you don't need to weld it, you're going to rivet it or bolt it or that type of thing, we generally have gone to 7075 T6 for its better strength properties and hence lighter weight.
What happens when you does 2014 become a better material under cryogenic temperatures? Did I remember that correctly from some places?
Yeah, but well, in fact, almost all materials become stronger as you lower the temperature, the physical properties rise. Some materials exhibit an increase in brittleness as you decrease the temperature. In fact, almost all of them do. Some worse than others. 2014's does lose some of its elongation, and some people try to say that makes it more knot sensitive and all this type of thing. But it, to be just factual, it gets stronger at lower temperatures, and it also loses elongation. We used it. There's only one place on the S4B, where the aluminum, the 2014 aluminum, ever gets to hydrogen temperatures. Mm-hmm. And that's in the forward face of the common bulkhead. See, we used internal insulation in the hydrogen tank, and hence the aluminum never gets lower than minus 100, minus 150 degrees. Mm-hmm. Now, the LOX tank, of course, gets to minus 300 degrees, but we felt like we'd had a lot of experience with that on the Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I guess some of those Thors were built, if I remember my numbers right, there was a Delta was not launched not too long ago that was had a first stage, a Thor, which was built back in about the late 50s. So,
mm-hmm.
which kind of tells you the material doesn't degrade with time anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what happens when you start adding the effective engine thrust on some of these materials? Did you, when you fire off the J2s and so on, did you have any difficulties in working out some of these relationships with people at Rocketdyne, or, again, is that a fairly straightforward engineering approach?
No, it's fairly straightforward because, we'd worked with Rocketdyne before on the Thor program.
Yeah.
So they built the engine for the Thor. It was straightforward, and that interfaces were established. That we knew where both of us knew where the interface was, and who was to supply the designs and hardware on either side, and how they had to mate together. And of course, when we started using the J2, and first our battleship program at Sacramento, and then on the stages at Sacramento, Rocketdyne had a contingent of field engineers there working with us. So really, there was, in fact, we had a man stationed at Rocketdyne, like several, during the development part of the S4B,
mm-hmm.
just so to make the exchange of information better.
Mm-hmm. Did Rocketdyne supply the thrust structure? Was that their part of their?
No. Well, we supplied the thrust structure,
yeah.
but the interface is established at the essentially at the gimbal block, because the J2 engine had the gimbal mechanism, at least the load carrying
mm-hmm.
part of the gimbal on the engine, and then the electrical interfaces and the two fluid interfaces, LOX and hydrogen. And we supplied the actuators, and the actuators were used to really actually gimbal move the engine and a thrust structure to our tank.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere too, now I'm just remembering it, it seems to me I read that von Braun at one time just wasn't happy about liquid hydrogen. I forgot if this was the time Centaur began running into trouble. Or, do you remember anything about that? Did you run into any problems along those lines?
Well, I remember that there was a fair amount of consternation about the time Centaur tried to fly the first couple of times.
Yeah.
And that's about the point in time where you had the S4 coming along. We learned some things with that. We learned how to put hydrogen into a big tank. It's about the first time we tried, we almost collapsed all the pressure inside it, so that we didn't ruin the tank, but we buckled it a little bit and made us all stop and sit back and think.
Yeah.
But we learned to do that. And, I don't remember Dr. von Braun ever, being afraid to use it. I'm sure he was worried about it after the Centaur thing.
And the impression that, and I forgot, maybe somebody was talking to me that there was a feeling maybe that liquid hydrogen was maybe too far advanced. It would be better to stick with, say, some sort of uprated H1 or RL10, not RL10, but H1 or F1 engine, something like that.
I never personally, I never heard him express that kind of sentiment.
Gee, I had a question in the back of my mind now, and I've forgotten what I was going to ask you. Now, you mentioned you had some problem with early tanking. Did this create a real difficulty at the very beginning? Because, as you said, you know, you hadn't handled this quantity of stuff before.
No, it didn't. The actual incident occurred. We built what we called an all systems S4 stage, which essentially was flight weight tanks, real RL-10 engines, but with not all flight electronics and so forth on the stage to control it. And took it to Sacramento, and one of the first, we mirrored it also there with the GSE or the loading equipment that was going to be used at the Cape when it came time to fly. And first time we tried to flow liquid hydrogen into the tank, we theorized later that it came into the tank with a big slug of liquid hydrogen, and it went up into the tank and of course cooled all the gas inside the tank down very rapidly, causing the pressure inside the tank to go below ambient pressure, which then collapsed the part of the tank anyway. And as soon as we figured that out, then we changed the loading procedure so that we made sure that we had good phase, a good change between flowing gas into the tank and liquid. And as I remember, it just slowed down and increased the length of time that we flowed liquid hydrogen gas through the lines into the tank and out the vent, so that we cooled everything down before we actually got liquid coming into it.
Can you remember any particularly humorous things that happened that stand out in your mind? Suppose.
There must be hundreds of them. I think once we started flying men, Apollo, at least as far as the S-4B crews went, and I think this last launch, I think it's the first one I haven't been either to Cape with or in Houston. The S-4B anyway performed so long that the guys were just completely whipped by the time the 4B part of the mission was over, and they just didn't feel up to having any big parties. If you go way back in time after things like Thor, when the Thor philosophy kind of was build them fast and shoot them and find out your problems, you know. And so we had a few failures intermingled with some success. When you have a success, the people really did kind of let go. And I think one difference with, at least with the guys that I've been associated with on a 4B, was that they just physically couldn't stand it, you know, because the counts almost always picked up 10 or 11 hours before liftoff, so that by the time they went through a normal count, liftoff, and then 6 or 7 hours of S-4B performance, they had stretched their waking time out to 18 or 20 hours, and they were really not much shape to go out and do too many things.
Well, that's interesting about the Thor program. You build them and shoot them off and accept the failures.
There is a school of thought. I think you can probably still find some people today that, as long as you don't have a man involved, where you're really risking life, that would argue with you that you can develop a program quicker and cheaper by just building and flying rather than going through all the extensive testing that we went through on the Apollo program. I'm not sure who's right. But, there are two camps to it.
Right.
And the Thor camp really was kind of that. We ran very little development testing before we actually tried to fly the first one.
Okay, maybe you could just, if you would, start by telling a little bit how you got on the Saturn program and what you did when you first started and what you've been doing since.
Fine. I graduated from the University of Oklahoma in 19... 19-